Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Folks, the next News One Now. Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Why can't this man just answer some simple questions? Yesterday, he went before the Senate Intelligence Committee and pretty much refused to answer any questions about his private conversations with President Donald Trump. But Trump has not invoked executive privilege, so why can't he actually say something? And again, another senator, the same one, Senator John McCain, decides to interrupt Senator Kamala Harris, and she gets reprimanded by the committee again. Why? Because she was actually asking Sessions some questions in a tough manner, and they were just coming at him so fast, he didn't know what to do. Yeah, we're gonna break that thing down. Also, what the world is going on in the United States Senate with this health care bill, which nobody has seen because they have it hidden under wraps. What in the world is happening, and will it screw the American people? Also, Bill Cosby's fate is in the hand of jurors that continue to deliberate when it comes to his sexual assault trial. Also, his spokesman has started drama outside the court and is not making the folks on Andrea Constance's team happy. Also, in Virginia, we have the winners on the Democratic and Republican side for governor, lieutenant governor. What's up with Republicans almost picking a guy who pretty much was advocating white supremacist views? We'll break that thing down as well. Plus, formerly incarcerated women, what they need in order to successfully reenter society. We'll talk with the author who has been called a modern-day Harriet Tubman, Susan Burton, whose new memoir gives a riveting account how she overcame a life of drugs in prison to become a staunch advocate for other women facing similar struggles. Time to bring the funk on News One Now TV One.
The suggestion that I participated in any collusion, that I was aware of any collusion with the Russian government to hurt this country, which I have served with honor for 35 years, or to undermine the integrity of our democratic process, is an appalling and detestable lie.
Oh my goodness, Attorney General Jeff Beauregard Sessions was just beside himself yesterday, testifying before the Senate when it came to any communications he had with Russian officials about meddling in the presidential election. But when it came to answering specific questions, Sessions spent most of the hearing saying he could not recall or would not divulge confidential conversations he had with the president, even though the president has not exerted executive privilege.
Did you ever discuss Director Comey's FBI handling of the Russia investigations with the president or anyone else?
That would call for a communication between the Attorney General and the president, and I'm not able to comment on that. I'm not able to discuss with you or confirm or deny the nature of private conversations that I may have had with the president on this subject or others. And I know that how this will be discussed, but that's the rules that has adhered to by the Department of Justice, as you know, Senator Feinstein.
What is the legal basis for your refusal to answer these questions?
I am protecting the right of the president to assert it if he chooses, and there may be other privileges that could apply in this circumstance.
Really? The hearing got testy when Senator Ron Wyden brought up fired FBI Director James Comey's testimony last week, suggesting that there was more to Sessions recusing himself from the Russian investigation than meets the eye.
Sessions, respectfully, you're not answering the question.
Well, what is the question?
The question is, Mr. Comey said that there were matters with respect to the recusal that were problematic and he couldn't talk about them. What are they?
Why don't you tell me? There are none, Senator Wyden. There are none. I can tell you that for absolute certainty. This is a secret innuendo being leaked out there about me, and I don't appreciate it. And I've tried to give my best and truthful answers to any committee I've appeared before, and it's really people are suggesting through innuendo that I have been not honest about matters, and I've tried to be honest.
Beauregard. And for the second time in a week, Democratic Senator Kamala Harris was reprimanded by Chairman Burr for interrupting the witness during her Q&A session. As a former prosecutor and former California Attorney General, led redirective sessions into answering her pointed questions.
The Soviet Union did, in fact, collapse. It's really a tragic strategic event that we're not able to get along better than
before
we are
being
today.
Sworn in as Attorney General, how did you typically communicate with then-candidate or President-elect Trump?
I did not submit memoranda. I did not make formal presentations.
Did you ever communicate with him in writing?
I don't believe so.
And you referred to a longstanding DOJ policy. Can you tell us what policy it is you're talking about?
Well, I think most cabinet people, as the witnesses you had before you earlier, those individuals declined to comment because we're all about conversations with the president.
Sir, I'm just asking you about the DOJ policy you referred to.
A policy that goes beyond just the attorney general.
Is that policy in writing somewhere?
I think so.
So did you not consult it before you came before this committee, knowing we would ask you questions about
it? Well, we talked about it. The policy is
based... Did you ask that it would be shown to you?
The policy is based on the principle that the president...
Sir, I'm not asking about the principle. I'm asking when you would be asked these questions and you would rely on that policy.
Chairman,
did you not ask your staff to show you the policy that would be the basis for you refusing to answer the majority of questions that have been asked of you?
Chairman, the witness should be allowed to answer the question.
Senators will allow the chair to control the hearing. Senator Harris, let him answer.
Please do. Thank you.
We talked about it, and we talked about the real principle that's at stake. It's one that I have some appreciation for, as having spent 15 years in the Department of Justice, to waive that privilege without a clear approval
Chairman,
of the president.
I have asked.
And that's the situation
Mr.
we're in.
For a yes or no, did you ask?
So the answer is yes, I consulted.
Senator, did you ask your staff
Senator
to see
Stein
the policy?
Expired.
Apparently
Senator
not.
Well, now. Let's go to our panel. Greg Carr, Chair of the Department of Afro-American Studies at Howard University. Angela Rye, Principal and CEO of Impact Strategies. Kim Klatchik, Republican contributor for PolitiChicks. And George Farrell, founder of Black Pack and author of Success is Color Blind. George, what's up with the white guys on the panel, like Senator John McCain? Can a sister challenge him? And it's interesting, Senator Ron Wyden was even tougher in asking questions. He didn't interrupt him, didn't say, how dare you?
I can't answer for that, but I think there is a policy of privacy between the president, if he has a conversation with you, that you should be kept private, unless...
What's the policy?
Right. I haven't seen the written policy,
I'm,
but...
I'm not asking you that question.
Okay.
What I want to know is, why is it for the second week in a row, Senator John McCain determined that he was going to interrupt Senator Kamala Harris when other senators were asking tough questions, but she's the only one somehow that's reserved for?
I cannot answer for Senator John McCain.
So what are your thoughts on it?
My thoughts are that she should be allowed to speak, that she should ask tough questions, that he should answer the questions, but there is a policy that if you have a conversation with the president, it may be confidential.
Hold up, sorry. There is a policy, and it may be confidential. That doesn't make any sense, Angela, because here's the deal. If the president chooses to exert executive privilege, fine, but he hasn't. And then for...
Well, he's not going to exert executive privilege until the conversation is over, until we know where this is going.
Hold up.
He may not exert it now, but he can choose to do it later.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. So here's what I think is important. You mentioned Senator Wyden. I would also point to Senator Angus King, who really set the stage for Senator Kamala Harris's follow-up questioning. What I think is interesting is Jeff Sessions really began to squirm about the concept of executive privilege because no other senator before Senator King challenged him on the premise, are you asserting executive privilege? And in that moment, he said, I would have to defer to the president because I don't have, that's not something that he can do. The president has not done that. So for him to rely on some ambiguity in executive privilege while testifying creates this real point of contention for Kamala Harris to say, listen, You had a policy that you're relying upon to say you don't have to answer most of these questions, and then Senator Burr, of course, saw where this was going and began to cut her off.
He also was a little ticked about with Senator McCain by saying, "Senators, let the chair run a committee."
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And let's be clear, Kim, McCain is not a member of the committee.
Well, he's ex officio.
Right. But he's not. But the bottom line is they're allowing him to participate, and he's just like, okay, I'm just going to run this thing. So can a sister be allowed to ask a question?
Yeah, no, McCain obviously came a little out of pocket, but...
Again.
But, you know, and she was asking tough questions, and I think it did make him a little uncomfortable. I think he doesn't know. I think it's kind of murky for him, whether it's executive privilege. I think when she asked him...
Stop.
Have you talked to your staff about it? I don't think he really did.
Hold Kim. It's not confusing. Either the president asserts executive privilege or not. It's not confusing. The president has it. He is saying, well, I can't talk about it. Actually, you can. He is offering no basis by which to stand on. None.
Well, the president said he's going to testify. He said he will testify.
No. Get your facts right. The president was asked specifically, would he testify to Mueller? Not before Congress. Greg, what we're facing here is an AG who clearly couldn't handle tough questions from this sister. And, oh, my goodness, you're going just too fast for me. I don't know what to do. I mean...
You're making me nervous.
You're making me nervous. It's like, oh, this little black woman scaring me to death.
Well, I mean, like you covered, this is the anniversary around the time of Loving. You know, when John McCain and Beauregard Sessions were born, Kamala Harris would have been illegal in many states in this country. Her parents couldn't have gotten married. So, I mean, they're thinking about the old days. But more importantly, what you're seeing here, I think, is the fact that we have an unhinged guy in the White House. They have a windfall. They want to get anything they can get through, this health care ridiculous stuff they're doing, this Dodd-Frank stuff they went through last week. And we saw the preview of what we saw yesterday in last week when two other officials said, well, you know, we're not at liberty to divulge. That's because everyone is trying to insulate themselves from this lunatic long enough for them to push their agendas, because there's no coherent GOP agenda. Everyone has their own agenda. And if they can create wiggle room, then they can perhaps push us, you know, just get rid of this marijuana, what you covered yesterday. I mean, Sessions has his own agenda. He doesn't care, and he doesn't want to go to jail, which is why the ambiguity is there. And you can't produce a policy because you know that policy doesn't exist. A first-year law student can show you that. Show me the paper.
So, actually, the one thing in his defense, which I will never do, but I'm just going to say this, there were also Obama administration officials who relied upon a policy that says they're not allowed to divulge conversations with the president. Here's the problem with how he was choosing to assert whatever this policy is yesterday. Mm. They were asking him questions not about conversations with Donald Trump, and he was still relying on said policy. He knew, you said that he didn't know, or somebody said that he didn't really know.
I'm sorry.
I think he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yes.
He's a lawyer. He's a seasoned lawyer. He's a seasoned DOJ lawyer. That's right.
30-year in the United States Senate. Yeah, come on, dude. You know what's up.
Speaking of a detestable lie, he was sitting front and center at that hearing yesterday. That was the detestable lie.
And he doesn't want to go to jail. He didn't answer the questions about the Russians. Did you or did you not meet? He didn't answer the questions when it came to whether or not he had advanced knowledge and the recusal issue alone.
Well, even on the point about the meetings with the Russians, I think that's also fuzzy, because he says, I was confused in the hearing initially with Senator Franken, but he never talked about his written response, which was a lie,
exactly.
Or at least it conflicted with what Senator Leahy asked him in writing.
That conflicted
with the later disclosure in the newspaper in March.
This is not hard.
That's right.
No, well, it sounds like Angela probably knows a little more than the senators that were asking questions yesterday, and maybe they should have came forward and said
something. Angela wasn't under sworn testimony.
No.
And he should have, as you said, he should have appeared.
But he is a skilled prosecutor. He knew what he was doing. He was passionate. He was forceful.
Who?
They were looking for a blockbuster, a bombshell. I don't think they got
it from him.
He was lying.
They couldn't get any
information.
He didn't lie. I'm sorry, George.
He didn't lie, but he didn't answer the question.
Did y'all watch the hearing, or did you just watch the highlight reel?
No, I listened to the entire thing.
Okay, so why didn't he resist then when Trump asked him to leave.
Resist? That sounds like Hillary.
Yeah. Okay. You know, see,
no, I think
no, no, no. You know what? George, okay. No, I appreciate that, brother, because this is the rhetorical strategy that the GOP is putting in now. When asked a direct question, they throw some chaos into the room and perhaps hope that we'll look the other way when, in fact, you have one of the major insurers in this company yesterday who decided they're going to go into several of the states that are, quote unquote, failing and collapsing because of Obamacare. Mm-hmm. They're going to go into those states now because insurance companies want to make profit. But we can't talk about the substance.
We can
stuff,
talk about that.
No, wait. Well,
people
I'm going to show you how
opted to pay the tax.
Stop.
George, that's fake news.
That's also down the rabbit hole.
First of all, yeah, that dog won't hunt.
Right.
And we're not going to chase it. No. So the bottom line is this here. What we're talking about right here. So give me in a moment, we're going to talk about health care. And y'all going to explain to me why y'all want to keep this thing hidden and nobody can read it.
No, it's hidden.
Hold on.
Everybody else can.
I'm going to a break. We're going to talk about it later, but the bill is hidden. Even other Republicans can't read the bill. When we come back, we'll talk about the Bill Cosby trial. His team, they've thrown a monkey wrench into this whole thing as a jury decides his fate. Also, we'll talk about what's up in Virginia. A white supremacist almost was a Republican nominee for governor. What's up with y'all? Okay, we'll break it down next. News 1 on TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
The jury of Bill Cosby's felony aggravated indecent assault trial is still deliberating his fate. Cosby faces up to 10 years in prison on each of the three counts against him over charges that he drugged and molested Andrea Constant in 2004. The defense team has claimed Constant was a willing partner. But as a jury peppered the judge with questions about the case yesterday, Cosby's team went to the press. His spokesman, Andrew Wyatt, read a statement from a Temple University employee who claims that Constant had a plan to sue a high-profile person to get money. Now, that was not allowed during the trial because the judge blocked the employee, Marguerite Jackson, from testifying in court, ruling it would be hearsay. Constant's attorney angrily accused Cosby's team of trying to defame her client, adding, "You do not try your case on the courthouse steps." The jury is sequestered and didn't see any of the drama. Deliberations also continue today in the case of the Minnesota police officer charged with killing Philando Castile in July. Yesterday, the jury asked to rewatch two key videos in the case. The jury watched a replay of the video that Castile's girlfriend live streamed on Facebook seconds after Officer Geronimo Yanez shot and killed Castile. The jury also watched video from Yanez's squad car and requested transcripts of the squad car audio. Yanez's attorneys argued the officer shot Castile 5 times because he feared for his life. Prosecutors say Yanez never saw a gun and had plenty of options before shooting Castile, who had a permit to carry a gun. Yanez is charged with manslaughter. Reverend Carlton Lee, the Ferguson, Missouri chapter president of the National Action Network, also the pastor of Mike Brown's father, has died at the age of 34. Reverend Al Sharpton, the National Action Network's founder and president, shared the sad news on social media yesterday. He wrote, quote, "Stunned to learn about the death of Reverend Carlton Lee. He worked with us as a National Action Network rep in Ferguson for Mike Brown. I can't believe he's gone," end quote. Reverend Lee, shown here on our show in March, died from a heart attack. He was a pastor of Flood Christian Church in Ferguson. In November 2014, he baptized Michael Brown Sr. at his church. Brown is the father of 19-year-old Michael Brown Jr., who was shot and killed by police officer Darren Wilson in 2014. After a grand jury declined to indict Wilson, Flood Christian was set on fire during protests throughout the city. Reverend Lee blamed white supremacists for the fire, saying he received over 70 death threats in response to his activism. Today, local radio station WESL Praise is asking listeners to share their condolences for Reverend Lee. After 14 years as Prairie View A&M University's president, George Wright is stepping down to return the school's faculty. A portion of his statement says, quote, "I've decided that this is a good time because we have just put the last legislative session before us and we are at a point where a transition in leadership will have the least disruption on our school." Wright is an African-American studies professor and says he will return to Prairie View's faculty to teach and conduct research. He says he will leave his job once the school finds an interim replacement. School officials did not offer a time frame on when that will happen. Under Wright's tenure, enrollment increased by 40% to a student body of about 9,000. Also, the school added several doctoral programs, created an honors college, and built a new football stadium. Now, in Memphis, faculty members at Lamont Owen College are unhappy with the school's president, Dr. Andrea Lewis Miller, its first female president. Recently, 51 full-time faculty members voted no confidence in Dr. Miller, who has served as the school's president for just 2 years. They say the campus's first female president has unfair hiring and firing practices. Board of Trustees Chairman Bob Simpson says they are reviewing protocol after seeing the faculty complaints, but he says Dr. Miller is not the source of their problems and blames it on lack of funds.
Probably it's the best thing that happened to Lamont Owen in many years.
Dr. Miller has not commented on the faculty's vote. Coming up next on News One Now, we'll tell you who won the Democratic nomination for the race for governor and lieutenant governor in Virginia. But the real drama is, what's up with white folks on the Republican side choosing somebody, actually almost picking somebody who was pushing white resistance? We'll explain next, News One Now, TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, folks, Republicans are reportedly close to finishing up their version of a new health care bill, but nobody has seen it. Why are they trying to keep this whole thing secret? Now, of course, you also have President Donald Trump, who reportedly has told folks that the House GOP plan is just a really bad plan. But he talked about how great and wonderful it was in that Rose Garden news conference that took place. Let's go right to our panel talking about this here. It's unbelievable that you have health care that impacts 1/6 of the U.S. economy, and they don't want anybody to know what's in their bill.
Well, here's why. Senator McConnell, right after the House GOP passed their version of Trump Care, he said, we're not going to be able to get 50 votes on this. So they have to walk this very secretly in order to get the support they need from senators who are going to be in contentious races in 2018. So I think that's the biggest issue. I think tactically it's smart for them. Of course, that means it's horrible for American people that would be left destitute and without health care as we were once before.
George, as I recall, we had about a 14-15 month debate in this country on health care under President Barack Obama. There were committee hearings. In fact, the president hosted a televised discussion between Republicans and Democrats on health care, even went to the Republican conference taking all of their questions. I don't recall Republicans doing any of that on their bill and ramming this thing through. Explain that to me, why.
I will do my best. I spoke with Congressman Brian Mass yesterday about this bill, and I told him my concerns. One, I don't think the IRS should be in the health care business. That will be removed. The IRS should not be an enforcement
agency. Hold on. Here's the problem. Now, nobody knows what you're talking about because the public has not seen the bill.
They should call their congressman and ask, what's in this bill?
Senators. Wait, time out. I'm sorry. So you said you spoke to a congressman, which means it's the House side. That version of the bill is already passed.
We're actually talking about the Senate. No, it's not passed. We're talking about discussions.
The House did pass their own health care bill. Really, the Senate is doing their own bill.
Right. The House bill, and these were my concerns.
We're not discussing the House bill.
Okay.
The House bill is passed.
The Senate bill
is the secret bill.
Well, you have to do the conference.
No, George. You don't get to the conference until after the Senate actually passes their bill. Then we do a conference.
So there's still time to amend the bill and make it work.
Can we please cut the schoolhouse rock for a second? Like, I don't even understand how we gonna have a conversation or a debate when we're not even debating the same points. Like, this is basic common understanding of how the House and the Senate work. This is how Capitol Hill works, and we're debating whether or not they're at conference.
The bottom line, I think George did make a very important, you use three letters that are really at the center of this. Internal Revenue Service, IRS. This isn't about health care. This is about a tax cut. This is what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. If it were about health care, they'd listen to the health care industry. All of the providers are against this. The AMA is against it.
And not just providers.
Right.
American Cancer Society, AARP.
But this has nothing to do with health care. Centene announced yesterday that they're going to go into Missouri. They're going to go into Kansas. I mean, you know, all this is about getting that wealth transfer to the people who bought and paid for this Congress, both houses. And in Trump, they have an unstable element. The man just came out and condemned those fools that stood with him in the Rose Garden last month by saying it's a mean bill. All of that is irrelevant. All this is about is a wealth transfer. And when you say IRS, then you point to the Supreme Court, because it was John Roberts in his zeal to expand the First Amendment to apply to corporate speech that allowed Obamacare to hang on. They don't care. Listen, if you are a 64-year-old person, and you're making less than, say, $24,000 a year, your premium is to go from about $1,700 a year now to $16,000 a year.
Kim,
these are the Trump voters.
Kim,
they're going to get screwed, brother.
Why is it so hard to simply allow people to see this bill?
I can't answer for that, but I am glad that they're going to take a look at it. And like you said,
who's going to take a look at it?
Well, this is why Trump called it a mean bill, because he realized his base, his voters, would be affected by it.
But he called it great, wonderful, great, the greatest, the most beautiful, the most lovely. It's so awesome.
Roland, that's a different bill.
I know that.
We're talking about the Senate bill. Like, what is so hard about this?
Again, so the House had their bill under lock and key. Now the Senate got their bill under lock and key. I simply don't understand, how hard is it? Why is it the Republicans will not allow even one single Senate hearing on this bill? Why are y'all scared?
They're still looking at this bill. This bill.
No, you're not asking my question.
It needs to address tort reform to go to health care. Health care and tort reform should go hand in hand.
George, show me the hearing.
George,
when are they going to have a hearing?
I will do my best.
Hold on. What did you just say? There's no hearing?
There's no hearing that we know of now.
There's going to be no hearing. Where's the hearing?
We don't know as of right now. We don't know.
Should there be hearings?
There should be
hearings. There should be
hearings. So why haven't we had hearings?
There are town halls. Each congressman is going to town halls to explain this bill as they see it. There have been town halls that have been met with resistance.
We're not talking about, you keep saying Congress, we're not talking about the House bill. We're talking about the Senate.
The people who are writing the bill are talking to the people that have been town halls.
Where am I right? Is this Groundhog's Day?
You battle these folks.
Jesus, God.
We're supposed to be talking
about the Senate bill.
We're talking about the House bill. But the congressmen are doing something.
They're having town halls with their constituents to say, here's the bill.
No, George. They're not even showing up at their town halls.
They are showing up.
Did you see Claire McCaskill?
Can
y'all play Senator Claire McCaskill?
Did you see
Senator from Missouri?
My congressman. Senator having town
Chris
halls
Play.
Where 200 and 300 people are showing
Will
up.
Will we have a hearing on the health care proposal?
Will we?
Yes.
I think we've already had one, but...
No, I mean on the proposal that you're planning to bring to the floor of the Senate for a vote. Will there be a hearing?
Well, I don't know that there's going to be another hearing, but we've invited you to participate and give your ideas.
No, that's not true, Mr. Chairman. Let me just say, I watched carefully all of the hearings that went on the Affordable Health Care Act. Dozens of Republican amendments were offered and accepted in that hearing process. And when you say that you're inviting us, and I heard you, Mr. Secretary, just say we'd love your support, for what? We don't even know.
What we didn't show, I wish we had it, was when his staffer told Senator Orrin Hatch what to say.
Repeated him what to say.
And then he repeated it because he didn't know what the hell he was talking about.
You know who needs
healthcare
now?
George, I'm going to ask you again. I'm asking you again with regards to the United States Senate bill. Your Senator Claire McCaskill just said, why won't y'all have any hearings, any public debate regarding the Senate bill? There were none in the House, and you're doing the exact same thing in the Senate. Why?
I can't answer that question.
Should they have hearings?
They should have hearings. I agree with that.
Why won't they have hearings?
Right now, people are having town halls expressing their opinion about the health care bill.
Why won't they have hearings?
The president has 11 million followers.
You know who needs health care? Clearly, Orrin Hatch.
This is a new way of communicating with the American people.
Clearly, Jeff Sessions, because they got either early stage Alzheimer's or some kind of...
Time out. I'm sorry, Professor Carr.
Okay.
Let's go back to how the Senate works. It does not run by the number of people who go and speak to their legislators, right, whether they're in the Senate
they
or
do. I'm not those people who go to town hall.
No, but that is not how a bill gets passed. That right. is how.
That is
but
how that a is, bill is
that
formed.
Is the opportunity, one of many opportunities that we have to influence legislation. But that is not how a bill gets passed. How a bill is supposed to get passed is it is introduced in the House or the Senate, and then after it is introduced in the House or the Senate, it goes to the relevant committees to be marked up, whichever committee of jurisdiction
it
has.
People
I'm
have
not
influence.
I want to tell you how this works because it is clear
basic.
Today. You have no idea.
No, you
so
know.
Then you get it. The bill gets marked up. When it goes through committee, it is then time for it to get passed on the Senate or House floor or to fail. And then after it passes the Senate chamber and the House chamber, there is a conference. And then that is when the bill gets passed by both chambers and gets sent to the president to get signed into law. What right. are we talking
well,
about
I mean,
right
I must,
now?
We do know,
George.
You must have missed
every one of them because you're talking about a town hall. Like, that's not
passed.
How a bill gets passed.
I'm glad you brought this to me because
I well, you know what? Because he's confusing the viewer, and I don't like to do that. So I want to make sure we're clear.
I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill.
I
must be missing that one.
So then why are you talking about a town hall?
But let's talk about this. You guys want to take the people out of the process.
I give up.
You don't want to take... The people are having more influence now in these bills than they've had in the past.
I mean, Obama, hold up!
With town hall! With town hall!
People, how can the people?
The people are
George,
going directly.
How can the people?
Using new
George,
new
George, 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 I got 1.5 million social media followers. You wish you had that many.
I sure do.
I know about Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Tumblr and Flickr and all of them. But still, how can the people have an impact on a bill they have not read?
That their elected officials have not seen either.
Right.
That's
how?
The issue.
Right. How can answer the question. How can it have an impact on a bill they have not read, they have
and
not
those
seen?
Those opinions are as strong as we are here. Those are strong opinions. Opinions.
But how can you have an opinion about a bill you
they,
have
they
not
know
read?
What work, the people
Stop.
Know what works.
Have you seen the Senate bill?
I have not seen
it. Have
bill.
You seen a copy of it online anywhere?
No, I have
it's
not.
Hold up one second. Were you able to see a copy?
I have not looked for a copy. I have not looked for a copy.
Were you able? Okay, I'm
tell you what. If I
let me come back. George, I can't. George, I can't. George, I can't.
The senator doesn't have it. They can't see it either. Nobody.
George, you said you're from Missouri. Are you from Missouri?
No, I'm from Florida.
You're from Florida.
Yeah.
Well, but
why
you said
D.C.?
Claire McCaskill is a United States senator.
Right.
She hasn't seen the bill.
And neither is Roy Blunt.
And she's on a committee.
And she's a United States senator.
And she's right. on a committee of jurisdiction.
Boy, please.
Okay.
When we come back, I got to deal with white resistance in Virginia. Next, News 1 Now, TV 1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks. Last night in Virginia, they decided who was going to be the Republican-Democratic nomination for governor, Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam, the current Lieutenant Governor, won the Democratic nomination in the race for governor. He beat challenger Tom Perriello 56% to 44%. Perriello, who had Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren backing him, conceded about 90 minutes after the polls closed. Northam will face Ed Gillespie, a former chairman of the Republican National Committee. He beat, of course, Corey Stewart pretty much. A supporter of white supremacist views. On the Lieutenant Governor side, Justin Fairfax, an African-American, was on our show Monday, won that race 49%, defeating Susan Platt and Gene Rossi. But I want to deal with this whole issue of Corey Stewart. Ed Gillespie barely beat this guy. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who appealed to white nationalists. He talked about the Confederate statues, other issues as well. He tried to cloak himself in Trump and populism. I keep trying to explain to people that because of this changing America, we're seeing this whole notion of white minority resistance, and it has a foothold on the Republican side.
Right. First, let me congratulate Ed Gillespie. And let me tell you, as chairman of Black Pack, I was approached by Corey's people, and I turned them down and said, look, I can't work with you guys.
Why?
I don't like your policy. Because their policies were not good. I can't. To me, he reminded me of George Allen when he used to have a rebel flag in his living room. Wow. And I cannot support things like that. Even though I'm a Republican, I don't support racism. So, Ed Gillespie, congratulations.
But George, but what do you say about the fact that
remember, this is a Republican primary.
No, but I understand that.
Yeah.
But what do you say about the fact that Gillespie barely won?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking about barely won.
Almost 1%, just
and
a little
lower.
Well, every race going forward in 2018 is going to be won by 2% or less because this
no,
is how the country
is. No,
we're
on all sides. We're talking about a guy who
significant conservative credentials, mm-hmm. okay?
Yeah.
Bedrock conservative, but he was running against a dude who's a loon, right. okay, a loon. Who was appealing to white supremacist views. And the fact that those largely, he was killing him in the rural places. If it wasn't for the urban centers of Virginia, Gillespie doesn't win.
The Republican Party post-Civil Rights era has become what the Democratic Party was prior to the Civil Rights era.
I'm glad
the
you said
home
that.
Of white supremacy. So when you see
don't
these,
no,
the home, brother, and the Democrats were like
that's
this.
What
I'm sorry,
that's
sorry.
It's from the home.
What do Confederate monuments have to do with the Second Amendment?
That's right.
What does voter suppression have to do with the Second Amendment?
That's right.
What does the end have to do with the Second Amendment? Any of that?
A lot of it has to do.
No, it doesn't.
A lot of people
what
are
does
in
voter
fear.
Suppression have to do with the Second
the
Amendment, which is about guns?
This is a primary. What are you talking about, voter suppression? This is a primary.
He's talking about the timeout. I don't know. Wait, there is something going on today with our ability to hear and
he needs some water or something.
Obviously
you're dehydrated.
Man,
all I'm saying is it's very clear.
Okay.
It's very clear what the point is. The point is this. This man who ran and received
155,000
votes campaigned on protecting the monuments of the Confederacy, campaigned on ensuring that people would have a more challenging time voting, campaigning on the fears of the same white folks who wanted Trump to take our country back and to make America great again.
I am agreeing with you, and I do not like his strategy.
So then, if you agree with me,
yes.
Don't pivot when it comes time to the answering this part of the question, which is, why are there more than 100,000 voters in the Republican primary in Virginia who that racism appealed to? Don't
because
talk to me
Gillespie
about the Second Amendment.
Is more liberal. What their choice was on the Republican side is between a liberal.
Ed Gillespie is more liberal. Oh, my God.
And a staunch right-wing person.
Let's look at this in terms of what their opinion was.
When you choice,
when you talk about the Second Amendment, George, let's ask a fundamental question.
He's asserting his executive privilege.
I mean, you know, Roland's been covering this, right? You got the Laquan McDonald jury, the people, the police back on the force. You got what's going on with Philando Castile case in Minnesota. Why is Rick Scott shifting the burden on Stand Your Ground from the person who shot to the prosecutors have to prove that the guy wasn't doing what he needed to do in terms of shooting people? Why? Because let's be very clear.
The second, why these people?
No. Why do they want guns? Because their fear of this non-white rising tide of color in this country, they're trying to weaponize the citizenry.
Yeah.
They're not going to just take the chance that the police could be reformed. No, we got to get some guns in the hands of these people because we got to protect ourselves against these people
this
and protect our rights
of face.
And the problem with Stand Your Ground,
the face of white resistance.
I don't agree with everything on Stand Your Ground.
It's not agree or disagree.
In Florida,
yes.
Each district attorney is elected by the county. And in
you
Florida,
see how they
stand your
by
ground.
Taking power out of
absolutely.
Her hands.
By stand your ground, the problem is the application
no,
of the law
no.
and the choice
stop,
to prosecute
stop,
or
stop,
not.
Stop, go ahead. Stop.
County.
Stop. We are not going to have a stand your ground debate.
That's right.
I'm going to keep it exactly where it is. And that is a fundamental problem for the Republican Party today is that it is, frankly, appealing to the interests and concerns of white supremacists.
That's right.
But not just that. It's appealing to the concerns of white voters
fears.
Who are scared to death,
yeah,
who
right.
are scared of a changing America. Trump pushed those buttons. He pushed it when it came to Obama's birth certificate that was clearly a racist intent, questioning the legitimacy of a black president. He pushed those buttons when it came to immigration. He's pushed those buttons repeatedly. That's why white supremacists were so excited about him running. This same guy in Virginia denied the existence of date rape.
Mm.
He is, that's the kind of guy who-
He's
that,
not a person no, I support.
I did not say
that.
You support him. But what I'm telling you is that's the kind of guy who came within 4,300 votes representing your party as the governor of Virginia.
And his strategy did not make him a winner.
And what I'm saying is this, and what I'm saying is this here, black Republicans, the two of you and others,
mm-hmm.
y'all better start saying something because I'm telling you right now, across this country, especially in North Carolina, which is the Alabama of the 21st century,
yes.
we know exactly what's going on here. And let's not be confused because there is clear intent to appeal to white minority resistance.
And it's our job as black Republicans to make sure the party doesn't go that way.
Kim,
and that's
comment.
Why we work on the other side of the aisle to make sure the party does not do that.
I agree. That is our job. And that's why we're here with you today, Roland.
No, that's not.
No,
hold up. Roland got this.
Okay.
Y'all need to go to the Republican National Committee and have that conversation or then had a conversation
every day.
Angela, go ahead.
I have that conversation.
Be honest when you're on the platform. So if Roland says, why would someone who is representing white resistance do so well in the primary? Don't say it's because the country is divided. When Roland says why, or asks again, why is this person doing so well in the primary? And then you say because he appealed to Second Amendment vote, or a Second Amendment gun rights, that's being intellectually dishonest. And we have an obligation to the people who watch this show to be honest and transparent. So I would appeal to you to do something
that
different.
They use,
but you're wrong.
Work.
You're wrong. And we already went over
not
that.
Wrong with
yeah,
the strategy.
Coming up next, strategy one now. What should be done to help formerly incarcerated women reenter society? We'll discuss this with a woman who spent nearly 20 years in and out of jail and is now making a difference for others who are being released from the criminal justice system. That is next, News 1 on TV 1.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
After spending nearly 20 years in the prison system and several years addicted to drugs, Susan Burton finally found help for her addiction. She was able to change her life as well as the lives of other women with similar struggles. Her memoir, Becoming Miss Burton, From Prison to Recovery to Leading the Fight for Incarcerated Women, was released last month. In the book, Burton reveals the damaging effects of mass incarceration on women, children, and families. In the New York Times, they did a piece on her. She has been called the Harriet Tubman on this issue. She, again, is the author of the book and also is the founder of A New Way of Life Reentry Project. She joins us right now, News 1 Now on TV 1. Susan, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Glad to have you on the show. This is a lot of people talking about this book, rave reviews. And we often spend time talking about black men in prison.
Yes.
But significant numbers when you talk about what's happening, going from suspension rates of black girls all the way through the prison system.
Yes. Yeah. We talk about children. We talk about young men. We talk about men. We talk about men and boys in color. But we're not talking about the mass incarceration of women. And women are the fastest growing segment of the prison population. And I'm like, what, we're not worth the conversation? We're not worth research? You know, what's going on here? So I'm raising the voice, raising the exposure to the experience of the mass incarceration of women through my memoir, Becoming Miss Burton, which is not just a memoir. It talks about the social structures in which this happens, continues to happen, and especially to the African-American woman, to the black woman.
Now, you don't pull any punches in terms of sharing your experiences of what you witnessed, what you saw.
No, I thought it was really important to be totally honest, transparent, and revealing as to what happened throughout my life and what my family, what my community, what my state's response to it, what this country's response to it was. So I don't pull any punches.
How do you respond when you see an Attorney General Jeff Sessions,
oh my
Donald
God.
Trump, who wants, well, I guess that answers it right
oh
there.
Oh, my God.
Go right ahead.
You know, I can't imagine we as a nation allowing them to set us back light years, not forward, but backwards. We've seen, and the research shows that, you know, where they're going is just detrimental to this country's greatness. Jeff Sessions talking about rolling back all of the progress we've made on drug sentencing, and you know, I mean, that's horrible. A policeman killed my 5-year-old son. I drank. It escalated to drug use. I got in prison for the drug use. While there's no trauma services, no therapy services, no group service, no services in my community for me to access. What there was infiltration of illegal drugs like the plague that came in and wiped our community out. So I took that and I got imprisoned. You know, the police officer, he probably got a whole bunch of police services. Me, a black woman in the community that has lost my 5-year-old son and a department that doesn't even come and say, Ms. Burton, I'm sorry. I drank, I used, I got put in chains. I worked in prison for 8 cents an hour. And then I got pushed back out into the community and said, go make it. So I'm here today only because someone helped me. And I've written this book just to tell America, you know, what's going on and what it's like. And for Jeff Sessions to come along and say, this is what we're going to do when we know other ways of addressing this is more effective and less costly. Mm-hmm. That's my piece.
It's interesting to hear you. One, thanks for telling your story and for the courage that you're using to speak for so many who have been in similar circumstances. One of the things I would just love to hear from you is, and you kind of hit on this, is about the process of rehabilitation. So often prison is used to punish, yes, but not to rehabilitate. And you kind of spoke to your own rehabilitation. What are you doing now to help rehabilitate women who have been similarly situated?
Yeah. So I created a new way of life from my personal resources after leaving rehab and after working. So to date, in South LA, little community, over a thousand women I've helped to come through our homes. We have 5 homes now. We have pro bono legal services to help the broader community and the women in our homes. But I don't think it's so much about rehabilitation, mm-hmm, as it is about providing people an opportunity.
Yeah.
To become, you know, to know themselves, to have the opportunity that their lives can excel, that their lives can begin to thrive instead of just surviving stuff in the community. So, you know, there's the piece about rehabilitation, but I think it's about opportunity.
Kim?
Yeah, I'm so, first of all, thank you for sharing your story. My full-time job is an executive director of a nonprofit in Baltimore City where we help women in transition. So what we do is we actually take donated clothing, sell it on eBay, and with those funds we provide career wear for women coming into re-entering society and the workforce. Mm-hmm. So what you're sharing here really hits home, because there isn't any really rehabilitation programs for women coming out of prison. You hear a lot about men, and that's why we help women directly, because you don't hear about it. We work with Martha's Place, and like you said, you get 6 months when you are out of incarceration. You get 6 months at Martha's Place to basically put your life back together, to be able to get a job, be able to pay rent somewhere, and go on about your life. Otherwise, you know, you're kicked out of many places, and then you're dealing with homelessness. So thank you so much for sharing your story, because this really hits home.
Thank you. I have to, 6 months is a nice amount of time, I guess. But, you know, at a new way of life, we don't put a structured time, mm-hmm, on when somebody is ready to leave.
That's beautiful.
What we do is we support them, mm-hmm, until everything's in place that they are ready to leave and they won't recidivate and they won't go back. They have enough resources, supports, and stability that they that they're able to continue. Many times funding drives mm-hmm, the amount of time that you work with a, yeah, person. So we've, in the book, it talks about, you know, I told them, I don't keep your money. You know, this money is not conducive to really providing the type of opportunity the women at a new way of life need.
Hold tight 1 second. Got to go to commercial break. I'll be back in 60 seconds. News 1-9.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, the breaking news here. Congressman Steve Scalise and 4 others have been shot at a baseball practice in Virginia. This is breaking news. Fox News also just reported that where a congressional baseball practice took place this morning in Virginia, some 50 rifle shots were actually fired at that practice. Again, Congressman Steve Scalise. Steve Scalise is one of the folks who has been shot. We'll have more details on that
as it is coming forward. Again, that just happened, and police have been racing on the scene. And so with Steve Scalise, House Majority Whip, and several of his aides who were at this baseball practice in Virginia. And so Scalise and multiple aides have been shot. No word on how extensive the shooting was, and so we'll certainly be following this story for more details as we get them. Tomorrow on News One Now, congressional Democrats, they sued Donald Trump over foreign payments. We'll talk about that. Plus, Lance Gross, Lil Mama, and Tammy Roman from the TV One original movie When Love Kills will be right here on the show. Gotta go. Holla.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.